Kia ora and welcome to the Whole Tooth Aotearoa NZ, the show that is made by oral health professionals for oral health professionals. We will bring you the kaupapa of the oral health profession in Aotearoa to investigate the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the truth. Our guest today is Mr. Sam Carrington. He is an oral health therapist, a lecturer in oral health, and associate dean Māori for dentistry with a passion for haora Māori, oranga niho, and a mission to implement change to reduce inequalities in oral healthcare in our systems in Aotearoa, and particularly for Māori. And I'm super excited to hear what Sam has to say today, and I know that you will be too, listeners. The Whole Tooth Aotearoa NZ is yet to be sponsored by any cutting-edge dental company or organisation. This could be the opportunity for you. Call us on 021 0355 456. So tēnā koe, Sam. Ngā mihi nui kia koe. Thank you so much for joining us. And kia ora. I'm just going to welcome you with my mihi. Ko hoku nui tōku maunga, ko waihopo ai tōku awa, ne muri hiku a hau, ke kirikiri roa tōku kāinga inai. Ko Becky a Māori tōku ingoa. Kia ora, Sam.
Kia ora, Becky. Ko wai au, he aru a hau nō te aroa hoki. Ko arawa tōku waka, ko nungo taha tōku maunga. Ko Rotorua, a kahu mata, mā moe, tōku roto. Ko te arawa tōku iwi, ko Ngāti Whakaue, Ngāti Pikiao, Ngāti Hurunga Te Rangi, Ngāti Ronga Mai, me Ngāti Te Kahu o Ngāti Whakaue Oku Hapu. Ko Hurunga Te Rangi tōku marae. Nō Rotorua a hau, engari kei otipoti a hau e noho ana e nai nei. Ko Hamiora Carrington tōku ingoa. Kia ora, Becky.
Oh, kia ora, Sam. Oh, this just sounds so beautiful. So, tēnā koe on your 10-year anniversary from graduation as a Bachelor of Oral Health professional, and share with our listeners some of that wonderful insight on what's the last 10 years been for you, like Sam.
Oh, pretty busy. When I graduated, I was very, very conscious of the fact that I wanted to go into the public system. For a few reasons, one of them was during my degree at Otago, I felt like I needed more experience when it came to restorative work looking after the tamariki in an area. But I think for me as a Māori clinician, I felt it sat right in my Wairua where I could go and do something at a population health kind of level rather than sitting in a private practice clinic and just taking people's money. I liked the idea that I could just do the work and then no money was exchanged, and the work that I was doing was helping people. So I originally went to Wellington, and then after about 10 months working fully public, I got the opportunity to go into private. So I just started doing one day a week in private, and then I whittled, and then I went up to 2 days a week and took 3 days in the public sector. A job came up at Otago to be a professional practice fellow or clinical tutor. So I took it, and then I think, ever since then, I started that 2015. And then I was the only person in our team here that had two scopes of practice back then, which was quite interesting. And then I started saying to my head of department, actually, I'm more or less doing the job of a lecturer. You need to make me one. So he said, yep, all right, let's do it. So 2019, I think I upgraded, I like to say, to a lecturer. And then while I was actually a clinical tutor, I was also doing a postgrad diploma in public health. And doing that part-time, so that took a few years. And then in 2018, I got asked by the director or co-director of the Ngāi Tahu Māori Health Research Unit, Emma Wyeth, if I was interested in doing a master's in public health as part of a bigger project for her and her research team. So I said, yes, I'll do it. The main thing being it wasn't dental-related. Because my thinking was, if I get sick of teeth, I can just go into policy or anything like that. So, and then finished that master's, started it in 20, 2019, I think, and then finished it last year and finally graduated just, last month, which was quite interesting. And at that time, at the faculty here, around about 2016, I got promoted, I guess, to Deputy Associate Dean Māori, and that was from a succession plan point of view. And then when Emeritus Professor John Broughton retired in 2020, that's when I got the full upgrade to the Associate Dean Māori. So that's my one-day-a-week job, and my other four-day-a-week job is lecturing and doing clinical teaching.
Oh, kia ora, Sam. So you're Sam 2.0 now that you've had a couple of upgrades.
Yeah.
I know, and you do wear a number of hats, and that comes with such responsibility. And, you most likely do an extremely enormous amount of mahi, and I'm sure your one-day, four-day split, it's not quite like that. I'm sure you're, as any passionate oral health professional, mm-hmm. You will be doing this in your in your head all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to know a bit about each of your roles, and we'll just go through those if that's great, because I'd love our listeners to hear just the diverse roles that you've got and the mahi and what you bring to each one of those roles, and how valuable that is.
Sure,
to
a
profession, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So for the Te Ao Marama, what do you do with that crew?
I started getting involved in Te Ao Marama, the New Zealand Māori Dental Association, when I was an oral health student at faculty, and that's where I guess it kind of sparked in me like a governance kind of fire. I was the Bachelor of Oral Health Representative on the Ngā Mōkai o Ngā Whetū, which are the New Zealand Māori Oral Dental Students Association. And a really good thing about Te Ao Marama is that every 2 years we hold our Hui Ato back in Rotorua, which is where I'm from. So for me, it's going home, which I love. And back when I was a student, 10, 12 years ago, Te Ao Marama had... they would always put funding aside for their students to attend Hui Ato. So, which when you're a poor student, it's like amazing, because we also got to meet other Māori oral health professionals. And another thing I love about Te Ao Marama is that you don't have to be an oral health clinician. So we also have oral health promoters who are Māori, DAs who are Māori. You don't have to have an annual practicing certificate with the dental council. So I liked that side of it. And then, I think after I graduated, I still continued to go to Hui Ato. And now that I sit on the exec, that's definitely a place where we need to, as an executive, we need to think about strategies and ways where after the students have finished, they kind of dip off a bit for a few years and then they come back. So whereas me, I'm a little bit, I am different, because I was like, I'm still involved. I want to keep coming. So I'd still turn up to the Hui every year, and then back in, I think we had our 20th anniversary in Dunedin about 4 or 5 years ago, and that's where I got put forward to become an exec member, and I thought, so I said yes, and have been sitting on the exec since then. And at the same time, actually, same year, I also, I want to say stupidly, but in hindsight, it's not, I also put my hand up to be the secretary of the then New Zealand Dental Hygienists Association at that annual hui. I don't know what came over me, but I remember they were calling for people from the floor because no one wanted to do it. And I was sitting with the army girls and I was like, I think my classmate Kim, actually, she was like, you should go for it. And I was like, I don't know. And just her saying that, I was like, all right. So I stood up, and that started my level of sitting on all these committees, I guess.
Oh, it's a chance and an opportunity. And look where you've come with this, like the platforms that you can bring your knowledge and expertise and your voice to is, it's fantastic. And so on the exec, what do you bring specifically to Te Ao Marama that you can share with us?
So I Gosh. Te Ao Marama is a very kaupapa Māori organisation. So us as an executive, we, over the years actually, we've grown from strength to strength. Back when I first started out, I think I'm Leanne Waka, who's our current Te Muaki, and she has been for quite a while. Her and I, I want to say we were the only non-dentists, but I have a feeling there were other people. We had Hatia there, Hatia Dudu. Him and I came on at the same time, and he's an oral health promoter from the Bay of Plenty. But I think it's more of a collective strength space what we all bring to that table at Te Ao Marama. You know, you've got me in education, you've got Leanne who's in the public sector, we've got a few private practice practitioners as well. We've got Hatia who's from the oral health promotion space. And actually prior to Hatia, we also had a few other oral health promoters who also sat on our exec. It's not like a normal executive where you have specified, you know, you're going to be the treasurer, you're going to be the vice or anything. We recognize that Leanne is our Te Muaki, but we all just get on with the work and we all bring our own individual strengths and to make Te Ao Marama as successful. And the only, actually, Māori Oral Health Association in Aotearoa and the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Now tell us now about, you're also the Vice President of NZOHA. So tell us a bit about that role. Like being in all these seats, you know, you're able to have a bit more of a global perspective of what's going on. Yeah. Do you think you bring a bit of unity there too, a bit of connectivity between all these things? Or are we still as siloed as ever?
I think now that we have our own oral health association representing dental therapists, dental hygienists and oral health therapists, I think it's a lot better now. It's interesting you bring that up because we started having conversations back in 2016, and so that's the old New Zealand Dental Hygienists Association and the New Zealand Dental and Oral Health Therapists Association. Mm-hmm. And it was only until last year, actually, that we finally got everything over the line to create one organisation. And I guess you could say, you know, there's a few of us that have been a constant during that process. So I do want to acknowledge Anna Holyoake, who's our inaugural president, and also Erin Campbell-Day, who was our treasurer for the New Zealand Dental Hygienists Association and was the interim treasurer when we got everything, you know, legally done with the lawyers and the New Zealand societies and everything rubber stamped and signed off. She was, both of them were integral in ensuring that we brought that history from back in 2016. But we've always had our eye firmly on the goal that we need to stop being so siloed, like you said, you know. But also it was a strategic move, particularly since oral health therapy was a brand new profession back in 2017. I think in 2016 we knew it was coming, and that's why we started these conversations. And now we've had our scope for, I don't know, 5 years now. I don't say it's new anymore because it's been around for a while. But yeah, I guess sitting in throughout that whole process, as well as sitting on Te Ao Marama at the same time, as well as working at the university, it did, like you said, give me a global perspective about what was happening. And I think eventually all the ducks were lined up in a row, and we finally got it over the line. And, you know, thanks to the membership as well, because, you know, disbanding two associations which were very, very, you know, fierce and strong advocates for their professions at the time. And I do want to kind of thank the life members of those two old associations too. They had foresight to kind of see, you know, why they needed an association when they did, particularly the New Zealand Dental Therapists Association, which started in 1935. You know, having that history and, you know, sitting back when we started this, when we got our current NZOHA across the line, I did think, you know, far out, it's been going on for nearly 100 years, the history of the NZ, I can't remember what they were called, Institute of Dental Nurses or something, back in the 30s, even right down to the New Zealand Dental Hygienists Association, which started in 1993. And just taking all that history and then now making history, you know, we're the only organization in the world that represents all three professions, to the point actually where we've got our colleagues in Australia who have been trying to do the same thing and they just can't. So hearing their struggles and you know, wanting advice from us, it's quite interesting too. I mean, you know, us New Zealanders, us Kiwis, we are movers and shakers, and you know, when we want to get something done, we get it done. Not to say that Australia doesn't, but I mean, they are a bigger country, let's be honest. But yeah, and that's also not to acknowledge that there were a lot of barriers getting to this point. Some very frustrating, but you know, you just learn from what happens and acknowledge it and continue on.
Yeah, well, congratulations for also being part of the success of getting NZOHA over the line as well, because it is momentous for us to be together, because as we are all trying to pursue improving oral health, our working conditions and our professions as a whole, it's imperative that we're all together in the same waka, yes. Paddling the same way.
Exactly. And that's the reason why we... You know, and someone who used to sit on both associations, this is part of the reason why we started that conversation. It was, one association is doing one thing, another association is doing exactly the same thing. It just makes sense to just merge them together so that we're all, like you said, paddling the same way, getting to the same destination. So that was definitely one of the strategic ways why we decided to do what we did.
Yeah. Oh, and number three here, you're on the advisory board of OCAN. So tell us a bit about OCAN for those of us that don't know what it is. And, what do you do in that space?
Yeah, so the Oral Health Clinical Advisory Network, they, it is, I better get this right, otherwise I'll get in trouble. It advises the minister and the ministry on oral health services, particularly focused on publicly funded ones. So the interesting thing about OCAN is I got nominated to that ORPU, and I did have one of the exec members prior to me getting nominated approach me and say, you know, you've been nominated, are you okay with us putting you forward? And at the time I was like, oh god, not another committee. Talked to my partner and he said, oh, not another committee, you say no. But hearing what their kaupapa was, I was like, actually, I think it would be quite good to have someone like myself, or to not say no, more or less. Purely because I looked at who had their names down, and if you weren't in government, you were a dentist. And I thought, well, where's us? Where's those that are at the coalface, those that are working within the community oral health service? Not that I do anymore, but... you know, I have an awareness of it, having worked in it. I said to Moira Smith, I was like, sure, keep my name down. And then got voted in and thought, oh, great. So we meet we meet quarterly, and it can range on a whole issues from writing guidelines for the public service. So they've done like Fisher Sealand guidelines, kind of looked at, I think they were part of the fluoride guidelines, or have summarized it for practitioners. They make whatever guidelines, we oral health for older care, for older peoples is another one that they're working on at the moment. But I do want to kind of point out that the latest executive, it's myself and Pauline Korpu, who's a public health dental specialist up in Auckland. We are the only Māori, and actually I'm pretty sure we are the first Māori to sit on OCAN. So that was quite momentous too. And in our hui that we have at OCAN, it's wonderful because everyone there works in the public dental space. So they know the struggles, and they also know why we need to be, you know, adhering to things like Te Tiriti or Waitangi and decisions that we make. So it's quite good that people like Pauline and myself are not sitting there banging our heads against the table going, they don't understand, you know, oranga niho and Māori oral health. They do, and it's quite good because Pauline and I, we do have our sidebars and, you know, have chats about, you know, decisions that are being made. And, yeah, I think, Okay, and it's been interesting times as well because COVID kind of hit when I got on that exec. So I'm also a firm believer too that kind of take a year or two to kind of get a feel for what's happening in a group. And I think I've now got to a place with OCAN that I'm like, I understand it, and I get the sense that Pauline is the same because we're both first timers on that group as well, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, and just something that popped into my head as you were speaking about OCAN and the mandate that you're set by the ministry. So, Te Whata Ora, tell us, do you think there's some exciting work coming up for OCAN, since we're becoming a standardised, nationalised, all info are from one point, well, 2 points, if that makes sense. Yeah, that we're going to have something that just seems far more just far more in line with best practice, quality, appropriate, accessible care kind of thing.
Yeah, I think now that we are Te Whatu Ora, I think it's from what I'm hearing and seeing on the ground with the health reforms, it's still very early days to kind of figure out what direction we're going, but the pathway has been set through legislation. So the Paiora Healthy Futures Bill, which had been passed in June and then obviously got implemented 1 July 2022. It's quite an interesting time where a lot of people don't really know what's going on. But I think give it time and people will know. I know from an OCAN perspective, the ministry had been doing things to kind of lead up to when we were coming into healthcare entity. Mm-hmm. So for example, the National Oral Health Electronic Records work. So that's where if you had a child who was in Gisborne and then they moved to next state Dunedin, their records wouldn't follow them. So the ministry was kind of like, well, we should just make it one kind of thing, one titanium, I guess, where the records do follow them. Some other work that I'm aware of that we're doing at OCAN level is, the ACC legislation is coming up and, you have dental therapists and oral health therapists who work in these community clinics who, if a child had an accident, they would go to them first. But because our profession is not legislated under ACC legislation to give us like a ACC number so that we can kind of treat and recommend or refer when necessary, just an example, we had a representative from ACC at an OCAN hui, and being the only non-dentist on OCAN, I kind of said, well, why is it that OHTs and DTs aren't able to be registered with ACC? And she more or less said, well, what do you learn as an OHT? So it was great, quite fulfilling for me to go back through our course in Otago and literally list out what we teach and then send that in an email, just very brief points, and having the dentist email back going, oh my goodness, this is, why aren't you listed as an ACC provider? This is very comprehensive what you learn. So I think watch this space.
You're also on the member of the National Oral Health Equity Clinical Group. Give us a quick overview of that little role.
Yeah, so that one is more or less kind of bringing into light exactly what kind of services, oral health services are out there, and how we approach dental care in Aotearoa from using an equity lens. So I sit on the clinical group. There's also a Māori Rōpū. And then representatives from both those groups sit at the governance level and governance group. And in the governance group, you have representatives from Te Whatu Ora, Te Aka Whai Ora, so the Māori Health Authority. It's all about commissioning. When I put my hand in the ring for that one, I didn't really know what I was getting into, but it's quite interesting to sit back and learn how that high level kind of work happens. I'm hopeful that with Te Aka Whai Ora, or the Māori Health Authority, which is, for those people who don't know, it's when, iwi and hapu can determine what they want for their own people. and how that healthcare service is delivered for their own people. So part of my whakaro around that, I guess, is how do we make oral health front and center for iwi and hapu who haven't really or don't really know about it. I'm very fortunate that I come from an iwi te aroa where, you know, we've had a lot of kaumātua who have always said, if you have a paru mouth, you have a paru body. And we were one of the first in Aotearoa to set up a kaupapa Māori specific dental service, which is tipu ora. And I do want to acknowledge Inez and Piho Pakingi who helped set that up in my rohe. And I don't know, maybe that's why I'm kind of sitting on these levels, because it's in my blood, I guess. Sitting on all the committees. But I think as a Māori clinician who's kind of sitting at that level, listening to all this kōrero happening, I'm kind of in the back of my mind thinking, okay, in Aotearoa we have 8 oral health providers, none of them are in the South Island. So how do we get that message out there to our South Island iwi and hapu? How do we get that message out to the iwi and hapu who don't have an oral health provider in the North Island, a Māori oral health provider? So it's other things like making sure that they're funded properly, that they're what they're using, so their clinics and their caravans or their mobile units are, you know, properly up and running, and then they have the funding to maintain that. Because looking at Māori oral health providers versus the you know, normal public sector, the standardized one, Māori health providers for years were scrimping and saving to deliver the service that they do for whānau. And it still blows my mind that they're not given the same weight as the mainstream service. So now that we have Te Apa Whai Ora, it's kind of like, okay, well, now we have to start. The Māori health providers need to hold the government to account and ensure that they're funded correctly. You know, right down to even staffing. How is it that I can go to a Māori health provider but get, you know, 10% less pay if I went to the mainstream public sector, which is still not very good pay compared to when I went to the private sector? So I'm seeing initiatives like the voluntary bonding scheme coming out, particularly for oral health therapists. I think that's a great initiative, but we do need to see more resourcing into this area. And, you know, we're getting way more Māori oral health, you know, dental, oral health, dental technology coming through here and at AUT. If I was probably a little bit older, I reckon that I'll slowly phase out retirement in my iwi area. But we need to make that an attractive option for new graduates, because, you know, they get out of university and they have whopping great big student loans. The first thing they're obviously going to go for is a job which pays them the most money they can get. And unfortunately, at the moment, it's private practice. So compared to the public sector, and who loses out in that public sector, it's obviously, you know, tamariki and whānau. So I think there needs to be a real rewiring of how everyone views it and how we continue on moving forward.
Yeah. Oh, amen, Samuel. Amen to that. Yeah, I love these conversations. Are so necessary to make these changes sustainable, the advocacy that we must have to see improvements in Māori oral health they need to be had on continual levels to be able to be in those ears that need to hear this. Right, Sam, I'd love to briefly talk about your master's. So congratulations on doing your master's of public health. That must have been a massively proud day for yourself and your whānau. Mm. And I looked at your research topic. You were investigating the Māori views of antibiotic resistance using a One Health approach and a kaupapa Māori methodology. Can you give us a quick run through of like what that was about and some of your recommendations or your findings and how you might use that going forward in your oral health mahi?
Yeah, well, considering it's not really oral health related, but it kind of is. Yeah, so it was an interesting journey, my master's. It was a full-on thesis, so because you can do a dissertation, but this was straight thesis, which again was also quite interesting to do. Yeah, what did I do? So One Health approach, it's recognizing that human health, animal health, and environmental health are all intrinsically related, and that if one of them is out of whack, then all the other two are out of whack as well. There was no research out there really about Māori expert views on antimicrobial resistance. There's a little bit of research about Indigenous views, but nothing Aotearoa specific. And so that was our gap in the research. So my literature review was a little bit all over. I kind of had to obviously split it down into the three silos that are One Health. But from the outset, it was a very kaupapa Māori methodology. Like, we use kaupapa Māori methodologies throughout the whole thing. So I think it was important to recognize that I am a very early Māori career researcher. My primary supervisor, she is Māori as well. And then I had two others. So Emma Wyeth was my primary supervisor. I had Pauline Norris, who was in pharmacy, but then during the time of my thesis, she moved over to Va'a or Tautai, which is the Centre for Pacific Health. And she was our qualitative expert. And then we also had Professor Patricia Priest. She is a infectious diseases specialist. So she brought around the whole antimicrobial resistance kind of lens to that. And also the One Health lens too, because she's involved quite heavily into that. So yeah, just long story short, it ended up me interviewing 9 Māori experts, whether they were human, animal, or environmental health. So I interviewed people who put like Māori doctors, a few Māori dentists, anyone who could prescribe, a Māori pharmacist as well, which was awesome. And then right down to a Māori farmer. And Māori environmental scientists too. So did my interviews, did my thematic analysis, and lots of findings. For example, there were quite a few who worked in the human health domain who were talking about how, you know, colonization has had such devastating impacts for Māori, for Hauora Māori, and, you know, they were experiencing racism themselves within their own work. And how, you know, just the trickle-down effect of, you know, things like their own whānau, or they know people who can't, Māori, who can't afford things like basic antibiotics to treat basic infections, access, you know, being an issue for whānau to get to a doctor or a GP to get a prescription for you know, a common infection, right to how, a lot of people, it's quite interesting that us as Māori, when we work in our own fields, we sit in two lanes, one being things that we're taught in university, things that we know from a scientific perspective, I guess you could say, but also drawing on our te ao Māori perspective too. So I often find myself doing it as a clinician, but it was really wonderful hearing how the environmental scientists do that. How they apply mātauranga Māori to their worldview through their own mahi as well as outside of that. And how, like, for example, I had one participant who was talking about, you know, there's a whakapapa for antibiotics and a whakapapa for the environment, and everything has a whakapapa. And I've kind of thought about it in my own kind of work, but hearing him talk about it and talking about it so well, I was like, well, this is really, really cool stuff. Right down to things like, you know, Māori perceptions of medicines, you know, equity for Māori around education for things like antimicrobial resistance, it's just not there. Things like, you know, applying a whānau order policy approach to healthcare, because or things like antimicrobial, antibiotic resistant infections, because what's out there around education for antibiotic resistance, it's very Pākehā-fied. It's not very, you know, it's quite confusing. Doing my lit review and research on it, I was like, even I don't really get this. So, but then also another, I guess, finding was that within One Health, because I did ask the interviewers, you know, were they aware of what One Health was? And if they didn't, I had like a bit of a spiel I gave them, and then we kind of probed that even more. And a lot of them were, you know, One Health is kind of like a gives you, if you're collaborating amongst the three silos of One Health, it's a very Māori-centric kind of thing to do. You know, we don't hold things in silos as people. We we think of the bigger picture. So, you know, integration, collaboration, partnering, all of that came through quite strongly. But I guess if I'm going to talk about findings, so one of the findings we had was that obviously there needs to be culturally safe and culturally competent people at work, particularly if you're a healthcare professional working in a Pākehā organisation. If you're a Māori healthcare professional working in a Pākehā organisation, that Pākehā organisation needs to really look at themselves and think about how what they're saying and what they're doing could impact on Māori staff or you know, just Māori overall. Kind of really went about how colonisation and hauora Māori, particularly around antimicrobial resistance. So how did we get to where we are since the Pākehā arrived here around antibiotic resistance? And actually another interesting finding we found was that particularly everyone kind of talked about how when they go to the doctor, how some doctors are very aware and understanding and some are just racist as hell. But how if you're sick, the chances of you getting a back pocket prescription and actually filling that back pocket prescription and then using it, how there were inequities there as well. So we were finding that if you are Māori and you went to a GP or a doctor that prescribed antibiotics, they're more likely to tell you, oh, just go home, you'll be fine. Versus if you were Pākehā, it was like, oh, well, I'll give you a back pocket prescription. And, you know, if your symptoms get worse over the weekend, then you can start taking these antibiotics. But yeah, it's, and this actually happened to me. It happened to me quite recently. I had a doctor kind of try to school me about how, you know, how do you know what a back pocket prescription is? You know, it's just contributing to antimicrobial resistance. And I kind of, without being a smart ass, had to say, well, I do know, I did my thesis on it. But yeah, I was fitting all the criteria for an antibiotic. And to be fair, like my throat did get better over the weekend because it was Friday afternoon, typical Sam. And I did not use those antibiotics. I took them back to the pharmacy and they disposed of them. So it's also having that kind of education too. Not many people knew that you can actually take unused medicine or expired medicine back to a pharmacist. So,
Sam, we've discussed earlier your passion for hauora Māori in Oranganiho and reducing these oral health inequalities. And thank you for sharing such a fantastic overview of like all the things you get up to. I think that we could probably talk for 3 hours more. And, you know, the things that you've shared with us today, it's such an important conversation to be had. What should our listeners know from your perspective for them to be able to feel empowered in their journey of te ao Māori or te reo Māori or any aspect of just becoming more culturally safe?
It's a big question.
Or even one thing, one step forward specifically, because when I listened to your presentation a while back, 2 days ago, whatever it was, that it made me think, like you said, wonderful things like advocacy and, you know, embracing te ao Māori. As a non-Māori person, you know, for my own experiences where I've, you know, gone and sought out that information and spoken to people and said, well, what should I learn? What should I do? Am I on the right track? What if you're right at the beginning of that journey? Mm. What's that first step forward, do you think?
I think, and this is kind of what I was talking about the other day, it's understanding why we are at where we are at today. A lot of people, like I think I kind of put it a little bit like confronting in my kōrero I had. It was, you know, the effects of colonization and what it has done to Māori and not only Māori, but, you know, Pacifica people, refugees that come here, low socioeconomic people. It's understanding the broader picture that, you know, what has been done here has caused what's happening for Māori. So it's acknowledging that and reflecting on it, because a lot of people just refuse to acknowledge the fact that colonization has done what it's done to our people here. And obviously you've done that yourself, so I'll give you a big mihi to that. But there's people out there who are just like, who won't acknowledge, you know? And I think I use the analogy of Moana Jackson's houses, you know? How would you feel if people started building houses around you and enforcing what they think is right, and, you know, throwing in systems that completely go against what you know, and making you do it, and then just expecting you to just live like them? It doesn't work like that. So yeah, I think acknowledging colonization, understanding he whakaputanga and te tiriti and the treaty, and I do have to differentiate the two, because like I said on my kōrero, one is Māori and one is not is English, and they mean completely different things. So understanding what the articles of both mean and understanding why we got to where we are today, I think through he whakaputanga, te tiriti and the treaty, and also other things like Tōpuna Suppression Act, you know, how my grandmother's generation and her parents' generation, they had the crap beaten in and out of them if they spoke te reo. Up until look at today, you know, this year we're celebrating 50 years of te reo Māori being an official, and I say that loosely, language in Aotearoa. It's always been the language here. Yeah, just understanding that and acknowledging it and reflecting on that, I think, is the first step.
Yes, as we celebrate Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori this week, which is pretty exciting, this week, I said it twice. But yeah, Sam, on that note, I just would like to thank you, because you've just done so much in your short 10 years as an oral health professional. And we definitely will talk again, because there's just so much more that our listeners could gain from that great understanding you have as a Māori oral health professional, as we look to create more equitable and fair services for e tamariki and rangatahi, and you know, even in our private practice space as well, just being able to really know that we're all culturally safe in our space. So kia ora, Sam.
Kia ora, Becky.
Oh. Kia ora for making it all the way to the end of our longest podcast yet. Sam Carrington was an absolute gem to have a kōrero with. I give him a massive thank you for all the hard mahi he does for us as oral health professionals in Aotearoa, and also for the people that we serve. Next week, I'll be speaking to Dusty Pearson. Dusty brings his unique worldview as an oral health therapist practicing in Palmerston North. Be sure to tune in next week so you can hear all that Dusty has to say. So go well, my oral health professional colleagues and peers, from Diane and I at the Whole Tooth Aotearoa NZ. Noho ora mai.